I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January 9th. Good to have you with us. The New York Daily News broke the story last Thursday. Under the headline, alongside a photo of a smiling President Bush that read, "I've got mail and it's yours." The story that I have in front of me from the website has the headline, "W Pushes Envelope on U.S. Spying." The president apparently claimed that power when he signed a postal reform bill into law last month and then issued a signing statement that declared his right to open up people's mail under emergency conditions. Is it okay for the federal government to open up your mail without a warrant from a judge? Is this okay with you? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. But now some are saying that, like the Rocky Mountain News, that there has been some unnecessary hyperventilation about the government's power to read your mail. We'll talk about it this hour with our guest and with you. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Jonathan Hafitz, who is a lawyer with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So is this a new power that the president has claimed?
I mean, yes and no. It appears to be a new power to the extent that the president is asserting the executive authority to open mail without a warrant. There is a very, very narrow limitation under postal regulations for they believe the mail might contain a bomb or some hazardous materials where mail can be opened, but the concern and the significant concern is that the president is interpreting his power to open mail much more broadly in a way that eliminates the warrant requirement and would give him really carte blanche to open mail based on suspicion.
Yeah. Well, like what? I mean, what he's saying under emergency conditions.
Well, he's saying under exigent circumstances or emergency conditions, as you say. But the last 5 years of the president's use of executive authority indicates that he has a very, very wide view of what exigent circumstances might mean. Now, it's supposed to mean something that's imminent, like if the mail is carrying a hazardous chemical. But the president, you know, could well be asserting it to, let's say, he believes that there's something suspicious, that it's going to someone they have suspicion about. That's not an exigent circumstance under the Constitution, and that would not allow the president to open someone's mail.
Yeah, so you don't think, like the Rocky Mountain News in this editorial, that there's been some unnecessary hyperventilation about this?
Oh, I don't at all. I think that the president's use of signing statements in the past and the president's disregard of limits on everything from detainee policy to electronic surveillance should give great cause for concern and a need to uncover more details.
Yeah, well, we also hear from Tony Snow saying, again, this is really nothing new. The government has this authority, but the president just wanted to, clarify that when he signed this postal reform bill.
Well, the problem is the signing statement suggests that the president is reading it much more broadly. And again, I mean, the two principal concerns are the privacy and speech rights of Americans to be able to send their mail without government prying. And the second is ignoring the will of the people, the laws that Congress has duly enacted by carving out an ability to override them, as the signing statement indicates. Now, those are the two concerns, and I think that given the use of signing statements and given the language of the signing statement itself, there's real cause for concern about what the president has done or plans to do.
Yeah. Some of us would say there's no cause for concern for me. Nothing in my mail is going to get me in any trouble, so big deal.
Well, I would just encourage those people to look at history, because during the 1960s and 1970s, as a Senate investigation committee known as the Church Committee demonstrated, the president and the government opened mail of thousands of Americans, tens of thousands of Americans, and not just people who were, you know, suspected criminals, but of individuals who disagreed with the government, civil rights activists, even other politicians. And this type of unwarranted invasion of privacy also had a real sort of chilling effect on people's ability to communicate, which is a foundation of democracy.
Our guest is Jonathan Haifetz. He's a lawyer with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. We're talking about a recent presidential signing statement that would allow the administration to open up Americans' mail without a warrant. The president says he should be able to do this. The government should be able to do this under emergency conditions. Our guest is worried it could go much further than that. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. It's about 17 minutes past 7 o'clock right now. Tomorrow night, President Bush will address the nation and unveil his new strategy for Iraq, the war in Iraq, the surge in troops. We will carry that address live, by the way, at 8 o'clock tomorrow night here on the Ideas Network and talk more about it, get reaction and analysis of what he had to say probably all morning long on Thursday. We will be talking about congressional reaction to the surge in troops coming up in our next hour after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're wondering whether you care or not if the federal government opens up your mail without a warrant from a judge. The president asserted that authority when he signed a postal reform bill into law last month. He issued a signing statement declaring his right to open people's mail under emergency conditions. We learned of that signing statement just last week. Let's go to the phones and take your questions and thoughts on this for our guest. Andrea in Lancaster is with us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I think your guest is completely on point with respect to the dangers of this claimed privilege. I can offer a recent concrete personal example of that. Under the media mail rules, they are already allowed to open mail that's mailed under media mail rates to determine if it's actually media that's being mailed. And of approximately 30 items that have been sent to my home in the last year, none have been opened. But last week, the one piece of media mail that I have ever had sent to me at my law office was opened between Dodgeville and Lancaster. Perhaps this was only coincidental, but to me it shows that there exists a very great danger in allowing this sort of privilege and this sort of unfettered authority. In my case, it didn't violate the attorney-client privilege, but I think that it certainly had the potential for, and it certainly also allowed the feds to know just what kind of mail or media I was receiving and reading. I do a lot of criminal defense work. I also have in the past sued law enforcement officers who have arrested anti-war demonstrators, and to me it's pretty profound that this one item of media mail ever sent to my office was opened using the existing privilege, and yet, you know, what was sent to me at my home, you know, just as a private person, wasn't opened.
Wow. Andrea, do they have a post-it on there saying we opened this to make sure it was media?
Yes.
Yeah. Jonathan Haifetz, a reaction?
Yeah, I think it's very concerning, and it really does echo a lot of the violations that went on, as I mentioned, in the 60s and 70s with J. Edgar Hoover's FBI when he declared there was an FBI agent behind every mailbox, which was, and the real concern was that it would chill activities just like, you know, Andrea's activities up that are protected by the First Amendment, the right to advocate to of lawyers and other individuals to, you know, do their job, and I intended to scare people, I think, from, you know, taking controversial positions or doing things that are clearly protected and are really the backbone of American democracy.
Yeah. Andrea, thank you for the call. Let's go next to Mary in Milwaukee. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am agreeing 110% with your guest today. As far as I'm concerned, the president has exceeded his authority in doing this and assuming that he has the right to open mail without a warrant. He's done this consistently, however, during his administration. He, as far as I'm concerned, he should be impeached, and I hear no call for his impeachment. When he was elected and he put his hand upon the Bible, he swore to uphold the Constitution. In my opinion, he continuously has violated the many, many tenets of the Constitution during his administration. Thank you very much. I'll take comments off the air.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mary. First, I wonder, Jonathan Hayfitz, if you have any reaction as to why there isn't necessarily a huge outcry over something like this, the opening the mail, but there wasn't a huge outcry either over the wireless or the wiretapping without a warrant, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's certainly some there's significant concern, you know, among your listeners and many others, but I think that. I think that some other people don't really understand the dangers of what the president is doing in terms of our democratic institutions, our Constitution, and also don't really understand that the powers, the type of illegal powers that he's asserted, don't make us any safer. I think that people are willing to trade sometimes. Some freedom for security, but don't understand how secrecy and illegal activity do not aid freedom. And I think a classic case is the war in Iraq, where you did not have openness, you had secrecy, you had deception, and you had the single worst foreign policy decision of the generation. I really do think that there's a link between all these things: the illegal detention policy, the electronic surveillance, and the foreign policy. It's a president who really does not abide by constraints on power, does not abide by legal rules and legal process, and the types of decision making that are critical to having a democracy function.
Yeah, do you suspect there will be any congressional or legal challenge to this signing statement?
Well, I think one thing I've heard the ACLU will be seeking through the Freedom of Information Act additional information about what the president has done, and that's going to be an important start. But I also think in Congress things have changed now. We are in a potentially different era than we've been since 2001, which is that the Democrats are now in control of Congress. So before, the Republicans were able to block any kind of action, meaningful action, on the Hill. But that shouldn't be the case anymore. And I think that the Democratic congressmen who've criticized the president, rightly, are now in a position to do something about it and to investigate, to issue subpoenas, to conduct hearings, and to bring the full truth of what the president has done to the American people. I think that if the American people knew the president was opening, thousands of pieces of people's mail and reading it, there might indeed be a much bigger outcry. And so what we need to do is get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. I'm looking at this New York Daily News story that broke this news. Experts said the new powers could easily be abused and used to vacuum up large amounts of mail. Do you agree?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if it's interpreted as expansively as it could be, and as the president has interpreted the electronic surveillance or wiretapping laws, this could definitely be used to sweep up a lot of mail. The president, it defines exigent circumstances broadly. It could be read to include the many people that are on, FBI watch lists, government watch lists, or people the government is suspicious about. Like the caller, Andrea, who discussed the opening of her mail before. I mean, it could be, if exigent circumstances or emergency is defined broadly enough, it could really, there's no limit. I mean, it can sweep in suspicion individuals based on, layers of suspicion.
Next, we'll go to Laura in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering, if the president didn't like what Congress passes, why doesn't he veto it? He's only used one veto, as far as I know, in his entire presidency so far, and some 600 or so signing statements. This is not government as it's proposed in the Constitution, not the way I read it. This is government, a secret government, signing statements behind our back that thwart the will of the people.
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, that's the other concern. It's about the structure of American government, where we have, you know, three branches of government, and we, as you say, have when the president doesn't like a law, he has the power to veto it, and Congress has the power to override the veto. But this is a assault on democratic lawmaking by essentially being able to veto legislation or not follow it by issuing signing statements.
Mona in Watertown High, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I'm wondering if there's a way that we can stop the president from doing signing statements.
Well, I think, I mean, all presidents have signing statements themselves. So the problem isn't so much the statements, but it's the way the statements are being used. And I think that there should be an investigation by Congress into the president's use of signing statements, and you know, the ways in which the law hasn't actually been followed. I mean, the mail, opening the mail is a good example. We now have the signing statement showing what the president's view of the law is, giving him very broad powers, and Congress should now investigate, you know, how much mail has the president been opening secretly.
Thank you, Mona. Lauren in Delavan. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
Fine.
First of all, I don't think the president himself is really opening any mail. I think that's, you know, wrong there. But if somebody opening my mail would help catch terrorists, they are welcome to do such. It doesn't bother me whatsoever. I don't find this grievous attack on my freedoms whatsoever, and I'm quite willing to go along with this.
Yeah, it might catch terrorists, Jonathan Hafitz.
Well, I think that I agree with you in that the government, if it believes it needs to open mail, it shouldn't be precluded. However, the key is that there's a process for doing it. There's a process where the government has to go to a court and get a warrant to do so, and that's the critical check. I mean, that's what prevents them from opening people's mail who, for improper purposes, or individuals have no connection to terrorism. That's the critical check on executive power that the framers of our Constitution have built in to the system. So it's not opening mail per se. It's being able to go to court and doing it through a legal and lawful processes, as all administrations have previously done and have to do.
Yeah, Lauren, is that too much to ask?
Well, that's great and everything. I don't know if this will clog up our courts and whether our framers really, you know, if you really ask them to say, you know, gee whiz, we've got people that are exploding bombs in our cities and taking down our buildings. Do you think it's too much to ask to have the government be able to check the mail of people who are, you know, buying bomb equipment? And I think they'd laugh at this, but, you know, some people are scared of it. I simply am not. I mean, I understand the wanting to protect the freedoms that we have and the rights we have. I'm all for that. But, I mean, at some point, as a citizen, there's a responsibility to help. Yeah. And I think that's what this is all about. And I'm not afraid of this. It does not, you know, of all the things that scare me, this is probably way, way low on the totem pole.
Lauren, thank you for your call. We'll get our guest to react to that final comment after news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Jonathan Hafitz, who's an attorney with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. We'll continue after the news. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and we are talking this hour about President Bush's signing statement when he signed a postal reform bill into law last month and then issued a signing statement declaring his right to open up people's mail under emergency conditions. Is it okay for the federal government to open up your mail or any mail without a warrant from a judge? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We are talking with Jonathan Hafitz, who is a lawyer with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law.
He is quoted in the USA Today saying, "This opens the door into the government prying into private communications. It's something we associate with a totalitarian or police state." What do you think? What questions do you have? Our guest says that many are worried. He is worried that this could go much further than just opening up mail in some sort of ticking time bomb emergency. We did hear from a caller just before news time, Lauren in Delavan, who said that, you know, if this catches terrorists, it's okay with me. Opening up the mail of people, say, who are buying bomb-making equipment or something like that. These people's mail should be opened up, he says. This is far down on his list of concerns. Jonathan Hayfitz, so what do you say to Lauren and Delavan?
Well, I think that the existing mechanisms to open mail, that is, getting a warrant from a court, are not overly burdensome and will easily, you know, enable America to catch and prevent terrorism without sacrificing our basic liberties. And it's important that we have a legal process in place so that the government doesn't abuse its powers as it's done in the past.
Yeah, I'm looking at a lawyer for the Heritage Foundation, Brian Walsh, in that same article that you were interviewed for in USA Today, saying that especially with overnight delivery, that the government has to have the authority for prompt inspections. Otherwise, the mail or FedEx or whatever could become a courier service for drug dealers and terrorists.
Well, the president, under an emergency situation for foreign intelligence surveillance, can engage in a warrantless search, but it must thereafter, obtain a warrant. So again, there's nothing in existing law enforcement, the existing legal regime that would prevent the government from, finding the mail that it needs to find.
Mm-hmm. Anne in Madison is our next caller. Hi, Anne, you're on the air.
Hi. The government already has a very long list of people it considers maybe shouldn't fly, and a lot of them are people in environmental groups and, animal rights groups and so forth. A huge number of them have Arabic names. And I think if I had an Arabic name, this is going to be a very dangerous way to send letters at the moment. The Bush administration is noted because it wants complete privacy to conduct public affairs for itself, and it wants complete lack of privacy for the individuals who make up the 300 million people in this country. It's eliminated Congress, insofar as it can, from every legal action it can possibly do so for. It issues executive orders when laws should be passed. It makes interim appointments of important public officials. And we remember that Solzhenitsyn was among thousands of Russian writers and other intellectuals who were imprisoned, sent to Siberia, killed, because in Solzhenitsyn's case, like many others, he made a jocular statement about Stalin in a letter, and the Soviet government was targeting students, especially students who had expressed, a concern about his totalitarian regime.
Reaction, Jonathan Hayfitz?
Well, I think it's a very good point and a very good observation in terms of and absolutely correct about the secrecy that the government wants to, the administration wants to cloak its actions in. And again, warning about the past abuses. I mean, that's the problem with allowing for a complete circumvention of the legal process, the warrant process we have, either through the criminal courts or through the Foreign Intelligence Court. And that those checks, at least the Foreign Intelligence Court, was put into place precisely after a Senate investigation uncovered abuses by the FBI, where it was opening exactly the mail that you just identified, individuals who oppose the government, environmental groups, or then it was in particular civil rights groups. I mean, it was the same policies where they, bugged Martin Luther King's phone, opened his mail, did all kinds kinds of, you know, illegal inspections because they believe that, you know, he was a danger to the United States. And that's why we have a check. We have a judicial branch, a warrant process to put something in place between the administration and the American people to make sure that, you know, we don't have these kinds of abuses.
Thanks, Anne, for the call. Linda and Racine, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I just wanted to clarify something for your previous caller and for your listeners. I'm all in favor of maintaining the sanctity of the mail, but media mail has never been protected by this. This protects first class and higher classes of mail. Mm-hmm. And the reason media mail gets opened a lot now is because of eBay and the Internet and so many people who are trying to get lower postage by misusing it.
Yeah. She was an attorney, and,
right,
and she acknowledged that media mail could always be open. She just thought it was interesting the very first time any of her mail had been opened was last week. A media mail. Linda? Oh, I don't know what happened to Linda. But anyway, that's right, Jonathan Hafitz?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Next is Bill in Deerfield. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. I have to respond to Lauren before the news break. He was questioning whether or not the founding fathers would have had any inkling of the danger that we live in. Well, I'll remind Lauren that James Madison, the principal author of the Constitution, had to flee the White House when an enemy army burned Washington and burned down the White House. So he knew a little something about the dangers of the world. And after the War of 1812, he didn't feel the need to change the Constitution and get rid of the Fourth Amendment. I think that George Bush is a political move to silence political enemies, put fear into their brain, and just tamp down the rising impeachment flow.
Hmm. Is that the motivation, do you think, Jonathan Hafitz?
Well, I think in part, I mean, I think in part it is. I mean, I think that there's, and it's just a vision of executive power. It's a very ideological vision that is at odds with, as you mentioned, James Madison's view of a government of checks and balances. I mean, it's a view of, you know, the unitary executive, where the executive, as long as it claims it's acting to protect national security, has, you know, unfettered authority to act in disregard of the judiciary and Congress.
Our guest is Jonathan Hafitz. He's an attorney with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law. The Brennan Center is a public policy institute at New York University that describes itself as working to strengthen democracy and secure justice through law, scholarship, education, and advocacy. He's talking with us about this signing statement that President Bush added to a postal reform bill that he signed into law last month that declared his right to open up people's mail under emergency conditions without a warrant. Our guest and many others worried that this could go much further than that. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We're talking about our privacy rights. We're talking about the story that the federal government can open up our mail without a warrant under emergency conditions, according to President Bush, who added that signing statement to a postal reform bill that he signed into law last month. A lot of people concerned about this. Are you? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Rhonda in Appleton is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment, in and of itself, the idea of wiretapping by itself for, getting any kind of terrorist is fine. The idea of opening mail in and of itself for securing the country is fine. But when you look at these things and you put them together, these are two rights, two freedoms, two pieces of our privacy, of our lives, that are kind of torn down at this point. What is next? And this country wasn't founded like that. There are checks and balances. It's not that difficult to get a warrant. And our rights have got to be protected. I mean, our founding fathers have said, you know, you can't give up these things. These things are for us. And so because of that, I think that it's just completely wrong, and something has got to be done about it.
Yeah, thank
you. And I guess that's about it.
Yeah, thank you, Rhonda. But I'm going to add to that, Jonathan Hafitz, the founding fathers weren't dealing with the terrorists that struck us on 9/11. Isn't it a different world?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there were, you know, they weren't obviously dealing with extremist groups like Al-Qaeda, but they were dealing with their own types of threats. And in fact, the country's essential stability, I mean, the basic stability of this country, a new government that had just won its freedom from England, and that was on very, very, you know, was barely united and was on very shaky ground, was actually a lot less stable and secure than you know, the United States is today. So I think that the previous caller was exactly right, that the framers well knew about the dangers to a republic and to a democratic government, but they deliberately, you know, avoided giving the president the power of a king. And that's really at bottom what President Bush has asserted. I mean, it's exactly those kinds of powers, what we call the imperial presidency.
We got an email from Stephen Hudson, who I think was being a little bit funny when he started with, "It's not quite the same as the president opening up my credit card offers, but Bush authorized wiretapping before 9/11. Is that true?"
Well, I don't. I mean, there was always wiretapping.
Right.
You could always wiretap.
The warrantless wiretapping, though, came after that, didn't it?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. It came after 9/11. There was the what's called the special program that they was finally revealed. What was revealed by the government did not indicate. Didn't tell anyone about it. The New York Times broke the story, and then the president essentially admitted it was true, but has not told anyone any details. I mean, if the president is, if there is really, the president should tell Congress and should inform Congress, the intelligence agencies, and other members how this program's been used. I mean, the American people have a right to know whose calls he's been listening to and whose mail he's been opening. I mean, there's got to be some kind of accountability for what he's been doing.
Yeah, is there any explanation as to what kind of mail is going to be opened? What an emergency situation is?
Well, that's the whole problem. They just define exigent circumstances or emergency circumstances, but it's, you know, it's not limited to, you know, hazardous materials. It could be very broad, and the, you know, again, this notion of the ticking time bomb, but the president has sort of expanded that. So it could be someone who, well, we believe is suspicious, or maybe this person knows a suspicious person, and so that's an emergency. It's kind of an exception that kind of can swallow the rule. I mean, and that's really the problem. It's really very, very broad, and there's nothing to limit. You know, when you get rid of the warrant requirement, there's nothing to stand between the president and the American people's constitutional rights.
Next, we go to Sam in Wakanda, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of thoughts. My first thought is, well, you know, where's Nancy Pelosi and the rest of the Democrats on this issue? They made a big ordeal about wiretaps prior to the election. They used that as a vehicle to get reelected, and now there's nothing said about this because, you know, quite frankly, I don't think they have a problem with it. And my second thought is, you know, the American people really can just look in the mirror and blame themselves for all of this, because ever since FDR has been president, it's been, who's going to take care of me? Who's going to sign my welfare check? Who's going to sign my Social Security check? And now the debate in this country is, who's going to take care of my health care and take care of me for free? And when you invite the government into your life to pay all your bills, the government's going to spy on you. I'll take my your comments off the air.
Jonathan Hafitz?
Yes. I mean, well, I think that the Congress is just, you know, the new Congress just took office. I think Nancy Pelosi made clear that the issue of, or, you know, the continuing standardless kind of conduct and blank checks was going to end. I mean, time will tell what the Democrats do, but I think it's, you know, very early. As I said, they just, you know, took office this week. And I think that the government has been, there's been greater government involvement, certainly since the New Deal. However, there's never been the kind of assertions of ability to invade Americans' privacies. I don't think they're necessarily the same. I think a government that provides its citizens with health care does not necessarily mean a government that has to spy on its citizens.
Next, we will go to Dennis in Sister Bay. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, I don't view this as an isolated abuse of executive power, but part of a larger pattern that your previous callers have enumerated. Let me just say that on a personal level, it has had a definite chilling effect on me when I use the phone. You know, this guy, this president, this administration is asking us to trust him. How is that possible when it appears that he cooked the books and launching what I view as an avaricious, premeditated war against a foe that posed no threat? Now, he's been disregarding the provisions of the FISA court or FISA law by seeking a warrant to tap phones. And mindful of that, when I use the phone, I find myself speaking in metaphor and just thinking that who could be listening, and that makes me angry. And I don't trust these people as far as I could throw them, and I wish I had an opportunity to meet him. I'm 69 years old. He's much stronger than I am, but I'd like to throw him across the room against the wall.
Well, Dennis is not mincing words there, Jonathan Hafitz.
Well, I think he's exactly right in terms of what the chilling effect that these measures can have. I mean, that's what they had when, you know, the FBI was opening mail and during the Cold War, and that's why Congress put into place additional checks for in the FISA court, the intelligence court, so that even for foreign intelligence information, the executive still has to go through some kind of warrant process, which makes, you know, gives Americans the security to realize that, you know, they're not going to be spied on without any kind of check or accountability.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out exactly why President Bush issued this signing statement exactly, but I just realized the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act that he signed into law deals with, it says here, mundane reform measures, but it also explicitly reinforced protections of first-class mail from searches without a court's approval. So I guess that act included that protection, and then the president had to say, yes, except, but in emergencies, we can open your mail.
Exactly, and it's what the president means and how broadly he means emergency. That's the problem.
Yeah. Marcia in Fort Atkinson. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think that the American public is very naive in thinking that this has not gone on since the beginning of history, of time, in that if they're suspicious, if Pony Express carried something suspicious, someone looked at it, or if in the Revolutionary War there was some, they were constantly picking carriers and couriers of information to get the information from them, whether it was, on paper or verbal. So, and the fact that it's been passed already, it's a done deal. But the point is that the warrant, I'm a law and order person. I watch the show. I see how they go about getting the warrants. Yes, you can probably get one at the drop of a hat, but I do think that the legal system takes warrants very, very seriously. And I think that, that the general public is safe. And if you're sending something through the mail that you shouldn't be, which is, I believe, illegal, then go for it. I'm not worried about my bills that I send out and my mail that I send out. There's nothing scathing in there other than the fact that I might say, I dislike George Bush, but that's it.
No. All right, Jonathan Hafitz.
Well, I think that the problem is that the president is not using the warrant system. I mean, he's claiming the authority to act, outside of that system, and he's also claiming a different, in some ways, more dangerous power to disregard the acts of Congress. So you may say, well, I don't disagree with the president on this point, on the mail point, but what goes along with that is saying I you're accepting the way he treats legislation and not following his duty to execute the laws, but essentially as a lawmaker, a power the Constitution doesn't have him. So you might not agree with him you might agree with him on mail, but you might disagree with him on something else and should be very concerned that he's not following the laws that Congress has passed.
We'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for your time and for talking with our callers.
Thank you very much.
Jonathan Hafitz, an attorney with the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour and to Karen Prager for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of the talk shows on Wisconsin Public Radio, you can call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, 1-800-747-7444. You can also listen to our talk shows. They're archived on our website, wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.